97.9 FM, 1360 AM, along with Southern Season, bring you Side Dish with your host, Liz Cooper. Listen over the next 30 minutes as Liz Cooper brings the Chapel Hill Carrboro community culinary insights from around the world. From local farming to nationally known book authors, Liz shares an array of culinary tips. Brought to you by Southern Season, Chapel Hill's Landmark Gourmet Emporium. Landmark Gourmet Emporium, great for local gifts and delicious favorites. Visit them online at southernseason.com. And now, here's your host, Liz Cooper, with Side Dish on 97.9 FM and 1360 AM, WCHL.
Welcome to Side Dish. I'm Liz Cooper, and I'm here with my guest today, Jason Tesoro with Barbersville Vineyards. Welcome, Jason.
Yes, Tesoro. Good
Tesoro.
Afternoon.
Sorry.
Yeah, come on.
That's the beauty of this. I get to mispronounce names, and what are you going to do?
It's Wagner, not yes. Viognier, I'm pretty sure.
Exactly. Yeah, so we'll talk about Pinot Grigio later. Anyway, it's great to have you here. So let's give a little bit of background how you got started. I mentioned that you're with Barbersville Vineyards in Virginia. But how did you get there? And you have a lot of other projects that you juggle at the same time.
Sure. So. Well, there was a moment at 25 where I said, by the time I turn 30, I want to have either a path to writing or to wine. It was either published author or sommelier.
He's 75, by the way.
That's right. It took a damn long time. Well, by 26 and a quarter, I was going through wine, spirits, cigars. I started with Italy, Nebbiolo as my first love. By 27 and a half, like, boom, I'm getting this down. I'm doing the dance on the floor at one of the best Italian restaurants in Atlanta, Veni Vidi Vici. And the modern gentleman is coming along. Ooh, I've got chapter after chapter after chapter.
And this is the book that you're there
My first
penning.
One.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a guide to essential manners, savvy, and vice. I think of those as the civil vices. So they dovetailed really nicely. Well, here comes 28. Here comes 29, and I'm really on the verge of becoming a sommelier, and I'm on the floor, so I'm practicing, and I've got a book, but I have no literary agent. Well, here comes the literary agent. Oh, my gosh, and 30 is just in December. What do I do? And December comes, and I'm like, you know what? I'm a sommelier, and I've got some writing that I love, and it's cool if it's just a hobby in the background. And then the manila envelope came on my 30th birthday with the publishing contract from Random House.
That's great.
They've been, ever since, running in parallel. And thankfully, in the early days of the Virginia wine industry, there wasn't a whole lot to do. So I wrote a second book, The Modern Lover, a playbook for suitors, spouses, and ringless carousers. And meanwhile, I'm writing for the New York Times. I'm writing for Decanter. I was a columnist at Maxim, at Men's Health. Match.com, handing out romance advice. And then people started to really notice what was going on. You know, the masters that taught me said, trust your palate.
Right.
And when I tasted a Virginia wine for the first time, it was a Barbersville Sangiovese Reserve 1998 made by an Italian, Luca Paschina.
Mm-hmm.
And I quit my job and moved to Virginia 2 months later. That was
Fantastic.
2002. My first book came out in October. And we've been throwing ink and grapes at the world since then.
That's great. So Barbersville, let's talk a little bit about that since we've kind of segued there. For many people that maybe live in a bell jar and they don't know about the winery, a little bit of background. Yes, it's a Virginia winery made by Italian winemakers and owned by an Italian family that's quite well known in Italy.
So yeah, the Zonines are like the gallows of Italy.
Yeah.
And when we hear that, Americans are like, oh, that sounds like jugs. Like, you know, used to be, was it Roosevelt who said a chicken in every pot?
Right.
The Zonines are about like a bottle on every table with every meal. And so they make a lot of very approachable, accessible, inexpensive 4 and 5 euro wines. But then they also sell some really great expressions of Puglia, of Piemonte, the Veneto. And they founded this little tiny parcel, 900 acres. I mean, sounds big here in the Piedmont, but tiny for them, in 1976. And they spent the next 10 plus years just trying to figure out the Virginia playbook. And there was no employee guide at the time. And Luca came in and boom, started planting.
And a pretty young, let's say it's a young area for, I mean, they've been growing vines there and making wine for a long time, but really pretty young in the global market as far as getting people excited about Virginia wine.
Yeah, it was 78 was the first commercial vintage. First time Vitis vinifera, the great European grapes we know and love, were commercially harvested in Virginia. Fantastic. But nobody was drinking that stuff in the 80s for good reason. Yeah. And it wasn't until, I would say, the 90s, late 90s, we started to dial it in. And so by the time I came along, now there's not only a story, but there's a heritage. There's a philosophy. There's a voice of that terroir.
Sure, sure. So how would you describe, it's interesting to think about how the wines tasted in the 80s as opposed to how they are now. I mean, they certainly, as the adage goes, you've come a long way, baby, and it really has. So how would you sort of express to somebody that sort of scoffs at Virginia wines?
Well, just in my tenure, so 14 vintages, what I've seen is us figure out that we are a finesse-driven area, first of all. Whenever Barbersville nor any Virginia wine is ever going to win awards for opacity, for density, for high alcohol. But finesse, because of those cool nights, and it's not a hot region, it's a warm region.
Right.
We're figuring out, you know what? Wines that feel like they're somewhere between Bordeaux and California, I don't have to wait a generation for them to be ready, but they're not so extracted that the only thing I can pair it with is like barbecue and a Venice Beach Blonde, right?
Right.
So we get texture, we get minerality, we get great bones, great structure, acidity, and figuring out those grapes and figuring out which places to plant, which varieties and which clones and when to pick it. So in the early days, Cab Franc from Virginia was green, herbaceous, brambly. Now we hear people say like, this doesn't have any of the green notes. Now I'm getting all that black fruit.
Yeah.
Now it's got texture. It's got oomph, but that oomph is tempered with beautiful subtlety, florality, and aromatics.
Yeah. So it definitely has. It's changed considerably. I love to hear that. I think that it's funny when I talk to people about Virginia wines, and especially from our end of it, being at Southern Season and being able to have those wines available to people. You know, you have some people that are like, oh my gosh, I've traveled all through Virginia and I love it. And other people that are like, well, I don't want to pay that for Virginia wines.
There's still a lot of dogs out there, but
there
it used
are.
To be it was tough to
but
find
it's, I've
the
had
gems.
Some really wonderful, I mean, the Barbersville wines I love. I've had a few from Bro, that the Nebbiolo, that you guys do a wonderful Nebbiolo. They do a great Nebbiolo.
Yeah,
very, very different.
Very different.
But, again, kind of interesting and alluring, and it gets you thinking. You kind of realize that, it doesn't have to be from this spot or from that spot to offer a really wonderful
Well, let's throw out some
value.
Other names people can keep eyes peeled for. We're not the only game in town, and I'm proud to say that, hey, if you don't taste ours— go taste Boxwood up in Middleburg.
Yeah, yeah.
Go have RDV. Have Linden. Jim Law. We call it the Jim Law of the land.
Yeah.
He's not just a great wine grower in Virginia. I would put him in a conversation for great winemakers of the world.
Right.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
You've got Veritas, Keswick, Glen Manor.
There are so many.
There's Ankita Ridge is growing Pinot Noir in Virginia.
Go figure.
Thibaut Janison, one of the best sparklers coming out of the U.S. So there's a bunch. And as when I'm traveling, here I am. I'm in the Triangle. I want to drink the local suds. I brought a growler. I want to go home with some Full Steam.
Yeah.
I want to know what spirits are coming from the neighborhood.
There's a shout out to Sean.
Woo, baby. So when you are traveling somewhere and the chef has gone out of his way to showcase a protein, a green, a cheese, a fruit, a fish from a region, look and see what to pair that with. Oh, let's go with Australian Shiraz. Not when you're here, baby.
Right, exactly. Well, we're going to cut to a commercial break, and we will be back shortly. You're listening to Side Dish on WCHL 97.9 FM. Welcome back to Side Dish. I'm Liz Cooper, and I'm here with Jason Tesoro from Barbersville. So, Jason, I know you work with Barbersville. You're the brand ambassador. Is that your correct title, or are we making up?
I just made new business cards, and it was the first time I took the title off because we're such a small family. You know, yes, Luca is the winemaker, but he's also the general manager and the grand poobah, and he'll step in and make risotto when the chef is late. So we all do a bunch of different things. My official title, I guess, was chief sommelier and national brand director. So it's my – the way I put it, though, in simple language is Luca makes it and I make it go.
There
so
you go.
It's my role.
That's a perfect way to
know, I don't even live on the estate. I stay in Richmond, which is near the airport, because just in the past 6 weeks I've been in NYC and I've been in Charleston and I've been in D.C. and I've been in Atlanta. And now I'm headed to Chicago and then Mississippi. And my job is to storytell and play show and tell.
Right,
and
right.
I love that because there's no better way to open up a new eye, a new market, a new account than by opening that bottle. You don't need just the pretty face and the numbers. Like, put that in front of people and say, here.
Yeah, try it. It's yeah, the proof is in the taste, most assuredly. So I guess we should talk a little bit about where you're located and how to find you guys, because it's not just simply a winery. It's quite the resort.
An estate of wine is
fantastic.
Is what we've been calling it. And that really fits. One of the first things Luca did when I joined the family, and he's been named in the top 25 most admired winemakers in North America. Right. Our viticulturalist was named top wine grower in the state for 2015. So, yeah, there's a bunch of blue medals and blue ribbons and gold medals.
Yes.
But we like to say they make great coasters. You can't drink them. You know, just do good work.
Right.
And
right.
So we are just inside between D.C. and Charlottesville, mm-hmm. much closer to Charlottesville, but in the central part of Virginia. There are two AVAs of note in Virginia, Monticello, around mm-hmm. Charlottesville and that
sure,
Jeffersonianness. Yeah. And then Middleburg, where I mentioned where Boxwood and Linden are. Yes. That's more rocks and stones and great Bordeaux blends, and around us, the Viogniers, the Cab Francs, and we get the sparklers there too. So we have 900 acres, 190-ish planted to vines.
Fantastic.
We have accommodations. There was a house that was built in 1804 that we converted to
Fantastic.
An inn. And the suites are huge and lush and historic.
And an incredible restaurant.
Oh, yes. Palladio.
Yes.
We had our chef for 15 years. She recently left to start her own affair. 15 years, though, is like a lifetime for a chef. And she
to
earned,
stay in one place. Is,
yeah,
that's,
oh my gosh.
That's almost unheard of.
So her longtime Sue has taken over. So we haven't skipped a beat, but 4 James Beard nominations
Fantastic.
Under her direction. And then we've got the tasting room where, oh my gosh, here comes the busload of bachelorettes. But we also have the library where and sometimes I'm in the mood for, hey, $5 gets me 20 wines. And then I'm in the mood for, I'll spend 20 and I want 5 and I want to sit with them and contemplate.
Right, and I want to have something that's amazing and that's got some longevity to it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about all your other side projects. You teach classes, you give seminars, not only just, beating the drum for Barbersville, but also the Modern Gentleman. So let's talk a little bit about those kind of things that you
sure.
do.
Sure, and there are times when someone holds up the book and they're like, oh my gosh, you're the Modern Gentleman. I said, no, I'm a kid from Jersey aspiring to be one. And I think part of the reason I wrote that book is that I needed to read it. So for the past, gosh, it's going
That's
on.
That's an interesting way to look at it. I wrote it so that I would read it.
So I would read it, right? I have no excuse.
Well, sometimes, you know, when you're trying to learn something, writing it down is the best catharsis for making it happen.
So 15 years in, I've partnered with the Smithsonian and done a series of classes on
Fantastic.
Refined cool with them. I partnered with the Ritz-Carlton for several years. Here they had all this beautiful buttery leather back chairs and walk-in humidors until DC pulled the plug on that. And they said, we want guys to know how to use this stuff.
Right, right.
So, you know, when you say classroom, I think of something kind of state. I'm all hands-on. So I did something called Sticks and Stones, for instance, where I brought in a cigar roller and we learned filler, binder, wrapper, how to cut, toast, light cigars, and then the stones, right. pairing them up with a variety of spirits and cordials and whiskeys. And what's the difference between Irish and Scotch? And what's the difference between Armagnac and cognac? And really,
right.
again, like every time I held a class, oh my gosh, I came away with a whole new body of knowledge.
Well, and people don't think about all the things you need to, you know, you're out with your boss and you don't want to sound like you know, an amateur. You right. want to be able to order the right thing and yeah, exactly.
I did Fizz and Flash is a popular one where I do craft cocktails and the flash of gentlemen's dress, everything from folding pocket squares to an ascot to when do I rock the jeans with the jacket?
Right,
when
right.
can I go cowboy boots and tuxedo? Yeah. Can I wear a bolo? So yeah. having a,
and who started the untucked shirt? That's what I need to know.
I think it goes along with dad bod, which is which is why I do triathlons now, because with five kids, I'm like, I'm not going to be the dad in the playground.
I just, that's the funniest thing I see now. I'm like, whose idea was this? It looks ridiculous.
If I could show my ass on radio, I would. So there's those. Something I've been having fun with now is, I call it the art of blending.
Yeah, now you've done these at our stores quite successfully, and people love them with great, great response.
Right. So I pour Barbersville's Octagon, which is a classic right bank Bordeaux blend, but I've done it with other Bordeaux blends. And then I bring the components. I bring a Merlot, a Cab Franc, a Cab Sauv, a Petit Verdot, sometimes Nebbiolo. Not a traditional Bordeaux grape, but fun to play with.
Right.
Pipettes, graduated cylinders, funnels, and people are mixing and matching and bubbling and trying and sipping. And by the time they make their own blend, they go, oh, I get what Petit Verdot brings to the party. Oh, my gosh, I don't need 99% Cabernet Sauvignon.
Right.
So they start to really understand. And when they go back to their favorite Bordeaux blend, whether it's Napa Valley or it's classified Bordeaux, I feel like they're drinking a little more conscientiously. Maybe
sure.
they are perceiving the seam where Cab Franc meets Petit Verdot, where Merlot brings
something. They're paying
something.
Attention to
yeah.
where it's strong and where it's soft and
right.
where it offers aromatics and where it offers earthiness and maybe thinking about, I wonder what's in here
yeah.
besides just Bordeaux.
And I do that at private parties. You
yeah.
can hit me at The Modern Gent is my handle for Twitter and Instagram, themoderngentleman.com. Of course, Barbersville is, you just put Barbersville into Google and
yeah.
you'll find all kinds of stuff on us. The other class that's been really fun, I just did this at Atlanta Food & Wine. I called it Counterfeit Classico. So do you remember just a few months ago, yet another wine fraud
yes,
in Italy,
crazy.
Right? Fraudulent Brunello.
Brunello's.
And for those saying, well, I don't know what you're talking about, like, basically, an expensive, high-profile wine, the labels were put onto Planck, or at least cheaper, unclassified
Yes, more,
grapes.
I think, just a cheaper version yeah. of some unclassified.
To fool grapes. The Americans and pocket a lot of money, because presumably the Italians would know the difference,
yes.
right?
We're
going
to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and explore the counterfeits here. You're listening to Side Dish, 97.9 FM, brought to you by Southern Season. Welcome back to Side Dish. I am Liz Cooper, and I'm here with Jason Tesoro. So we were just talking briefly before break about the counterfeit class, or not a counterfeit class, but the class that you do talking about the counterfeit Chianti.
Counterfeit Classico.
Classico.
So my idea was simple. I wanted to take the fraudulent wines and imagine that sort of metaphorically, Virginia, Texas, Arizona are growing some of the classic
yeah.
grapes
yes.
that you would find in France.
Great Sangiovese in Texas.
Right.
I've had some surprisingly good ones.
And Tempranillo
yeah.
and Vermentino.
Go figure, yeah.
So I pitched it at first to the Spy Museum. My family were members of the International Spy Museum, and I thought this would be a really fun thing to do.
Right.
I just wanted to do a gig with them, and they said, if you can tie spies and wines together, we'll do it. I'm like, all right, here's what we do. We put out a Bordeaux from France, and we do it with Barbersville's Octagon. Let's pick a Vermentino from Texas up against and started going right on down the
right.
line. And they brought in, if you saw that film Argo,
uh-huh.
all right, Ben Affleck, they brought in Tony Mendez, who was
oh,
the character,
yeah.
that's who Ben Affleck played.
Yes.
He and his wife were the master and mistress of disguise in the CIA for
yeah.
25 years, and they were in charge of the counterfeiting division. So he did this whole thing on how the CIA, how they would teach them to pretend to be drunk, pretend to be sober, how drinking was handled and how counterfeiting was handled. And between vignettes, I'd say, okay, you've got a wine on your right and a wine on your left. You know, which one's which. So down in Atlanta, I didn't have Tony, but I had the wines.
Mm-hmm.
And we tasted them blind. So one of these is Alejandro Fernandez, one of the bastions of right. Tempranillo
sure,
in
yes.
Ribera del Duero. Mm-hmm. And the other is Pedernales Cellars out of Texas. Which one's which?
Yeah.
And
did
how
anybody
fun.
Able to decide which was, you know, like
a couple
Tuscarans,
of people, but the yeah. most interesting thing was how small the quality gap was between
so people
the
really
best
it
examples.
Wasn't a marked difference that you're like, right. oh my gosh, this has got to be
oh,
know,
that's
from
Arizona.
Indiana or whatever,
Arizona.
Right.
It was my yeah. first time having Arizona Crazy. Strongholds Nachis, which is a Rhone blend.
That's
Crazy
fantastic.
Good.
So, well, we've flown through this as always. It goes by so quickly, and I have a million more things to answer, so we'll just have you back. But it's time for our My Little Hot Seat question.
Ooh.
So the question is, you're invited to a dinner party, and you can sit between any two people of your choosing, alive or dead, famous or not famous. Who would they be, and briefly, why?
Well, you know, the first two people that came to mind are only interesting to me. It would be my mother and my father, because I can't remember the last time that the two of them
actually sat
were in
dinner
the same
with
room
them.
over a glass of wine. But looking across my career, oh, you know, I saw Picasso at the Lapin Agile, where oh. you've got Picasso and Einstein are
oh,
hanging
geez.
Out together.
Now, that would be
drinks.
An amazing conversation,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I would like to – I'd like to party with those boys with a little bit of absinthe and have the canvas handy because I see things visually but also yeah. have that the scientist's mind.
Sure.
And I love when people can put those two together.
Yes.
And I would just like to bask in that space. And if those guys were tied up that day, really anyone from you know, Paris in the 1920s, as long as it was like a whole night that ended at Moulin Rouge and then beyond, like I would be very happy.
So just a serious party one way or the other.
Yeah, I want to be – and I look for this in my life now around people who can blend their intellectual side with their artistic side with the gourmand. And that's why it's the modern gentleman and not the perfect gentleman.
Right.
Because that idea of knowing your way around the vices.
Sure.
And one of the things I cover, for instance, is like skinny dipping etiquette.
Right.
And instead of, oh my gosh, there's a right way to do it.
Yeah. And nobody really likes a perfect gentleman. I can go ahead and tell you that. Well, thanks again for joining us. And if you'll real quickly give your email addresses or your,
sure.
excuse me, Facebook, email, Twitter, all that very quickly.
Jason Tesoro at The Modern Gentleman for Twitter, for at The Modern Gent for Instagram and Twitter and those kinds of things. JT at TheModernGentleman.com, TheModernGentleman.com, and Barbersville at Barbersville for just about everything.
Perfect.
Come see me. I got keys to the cellar. I'll open something for you.
Fantastic. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Liz.
And you've been listening to Side Dish, WCHL 97.9 FM, brought to you by Southern Season.